Hi.
Hi.
So Heather, thanks for finally locking in this date with me for this chat. I'm super excited to pick your brain. And just as I was saying earlier, everything about you truly embodies what it means to be the healthy dancer. You've experienced the healthy dancer from so many different realms as well. So I really think I'm excited to hear your insights. But before we dive in, why don't you just share a little bit more about yourself, where you're currently dancing, and any upcoming works that you might have?
Yeah, sure. So I'm originally from Long Island, in New York, and I have danced since I was three. I trained with many different teachers in different schools, throughout my young life. I really value trying to be as versatile as possible. I was really fortunate to be able to go to a performing arts high school, the Long Island High School for the Arts. And then I went to college. I got a BFA in dance from the Tisch School at NYU. And then after that, I pursued a career in dance. And I worked in lots of different styles, including contemporary, musical theater, film, etc. And then eventually I ended up where I am now, which is my dream company called Momix. And we are mostly a touring company. So we tour all over the country and also throughout the world, which is really incredible. And outside of dance, in addition to dance, I'm also a certified yoga teacher and a certified animal flow instructor, which is like a movement-based training system, and an essential oil specialist. I have a deep passion for healing of all kinds, and I hope to pursue that after my performing career. And I also really love all things that have to do with the natural world, the earth, wildlife, etc. So, yeah.
Yeah, there is no doubt always there has been so much of an emphasis of balance in your life as a dancer. And I think from what you've already told us, so much of your day-to-day and of the work that you do both in the studio and out of the studio really exemplifies the balance that you prioritize. Can you tell us just a little bit more about how your other passions help to actually support your dancing?
That's a great question. I think if you look at dance, it's an art form, and we, the human beings, are part of that art. So, we're human, and humans have so many different facets to them. And in order to do this art, you have to be a human. So I think that all of the rest of my life, like good and bad, struggles and triumphs, all feed my art. And so for me, the reason why I dance, or like the most important thing for me, is connecting to other souls. So it's like, when I'm dancing, I'm trying to almost remind you of who you are at your truth, in a sense. And so I think you have to get to a soul level, and so you have to show your humanity when you're dancing. And that's a very like raw, very deep part of you, and in order to connect to that deepest part of other people. So I think just keep like I bring all of that, all of the parts of my life into myself as an artist, and I think that makes a powerful artist. And so I try to keep continuing to cultivate and accept that all parts of my life. And so a lot of times it's also like it can look from the outside like it's really grand and perfect all the time, but it's not. There's lots of suffering in the world, individually and on a large scale. So I think that all of that is still really important and really poignant, and can be a strength to art and artistry.
Absolutely. I always say dance is such a universal language. Obviously we can take it wherever we go, and there's a very unique and special connection that we dancers feel no matter where in the world we might be dancing, overseas, not overseas, wherever you are. So I think that's really a beautiful testament in regard to what you as a performer are bringing to your audience, right? Because for so many dancers, especially our younger dancers, and that's really who I do hope that these conversations get out to. It's what I needed. I think it's what we all needed, right? When we were in our pre-professional days and even younger days. But what ends up happening is that fixation. And it's because of industry pressures, especially just as one example. I mean, there's a fixation around food, but body image. And one thing, and now I know that this can very much be something that's easier said than done, but for a lot of dancers who become very fixated on body image, bringing in this new level and depth of your performance, both in the studio on stage, exemplifies so much more than just how your body looks in the mirror, right? What you're transcending to the audience, there's so much more depth to that. And essentially that's what I'm hearing you say, is that all of these experiences in your life are essentially coming together to help you do the work of transcending the audience and telling whatever story it might be, or helping to guide them in whatever story they're crafting in their own head while they're watching you.
Yeah. And that's something talking about like body image and relationship to food, that's something that I really had a beautiful revelation about a year ago in working with this relationship to food that I'm continuously like healing and building all the time. I came to fully understand that if I am trying to strive for an image to make myself look a certain way, but I don't have, you know, if I don't nourish myself enough to have strength and energy and focus and all the things that you need to dance, then what's the point? What's the point? If I can't dance, I'm trying to look a certain way, but I do things in order to, you know, try to achieve that, but it doesn't let me give my best dance, then there's no point to any of it, right? So I realized what really matters most. And, you know, when you go out on stage and you're performing, I think what's more effective than what you look like is how you're doing something. And so the audience is going to feel your energy and your performance more than they're going to judge the way you look. And I know that as an audience member myself, like if you think about whenever you go see performance, I never sit in the audience and I'm like, oh, judging how that person looks or the shape of their body or anything like that. I'm feeling what they're telling me. Mm-hmm. And so that just goes, that's so much deeper than what we look like or what aesthetic we're presenting. And so much more powerful, I think. I think you connect to the human part of somebody with, like I was saying before, your humanity and your energy. And last year I was in a really really important series of performances mm-hmm. for me in my career, and really intense. And it started to just, you know, bring up a lot of things. You get a lot of triggers, I think, in the dance world constantly and in the world in general, for some old, maybe destructive patterns. And so I would notice that they were coming up, and I would, you know, maybe in the beginning, I would let them have some more power over me. And then I learned firsthand, like, oh, but then I would go out on stage and I wouldn't be able to be as focused. And maybe I was dizzy, so my balance wasn't as good. And my performance wasn't as strong, and I didn't have energy. And I was like, what's the point of that? I can't dance well, and I can't be my best dancer self and my best self. So as soon as I like let that go and started fueling myself and doing what I needed, no matter what preconceived notions I had before that of what was right, when I actually listened and gave myself what I needed, then I had everything kind of fell into place, and I was able to give my best performance, my most effective performance. And I just had this really wonderful realization that I'd rather get out there and like give all of me, my best self, to the audience and give my most powerful performance than like try to look a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What an incredible realization to have. I mean, it's It is the simplest of science that we know is that if our body doesn't have the tools it needs, it's going to withstand the repercussions of underfueling, you know, that increased risk of injury. Why risk a stress fracture? If you have a stress fracture, I tell this to my dancers all the time, if you have a stress fracture, you're going to be sitting out for Nutcracker regardless of the amount that you're rehearsing right now. Because, you know, knock on wood, if that stress fracture comes December 5th, there goes your season. So it's so incredibly important for not just our dancers though, but also our educators to understand the realities of underfueling and just dancers not prioritizing their intake throughout the day, their nutritional, you know, intake throughout the day. Because a lot of educators still do pass on messages to dancers. Obviously, we know that. That's why, you know, conversations around body image are so challenging for a lot of educators. And we often don't see these conversations happen in the studio for fear of, and I quote, saying the wrong thing. But the truth is, conversations like this should happen, you know, with the right professionals. But also in what you're saying is just allowing for more ease for dancers to fuel themselves at the studio. You know, allow your dancers to have snack breaks, allow your dancers strip away the stigma around eating at the studio. And that's really something that I want not just our dancers who are listening to hear, but also our educators and our artistic directors.
Yeah. And along with that, it's like being on your own side. You know, yeah. Like you let yourself off the hook, and then you give yourself freedom to be what you need to be and how you need to be, and just being on your own team. And as soon as you can start to do that, it's like you unleash so much power, so much more power than when you're trying to like beat yourself up to form something that you think the world needs or that's the better part of you. But the truth is that as soon as we let ourselves be, just be, then yeah. That I think is where we do have, you know, come into our the best version of our that mm-hmm. we can be.
Absolutely. I want to hear a little bit more about your other professions that you are involved in and how you work that into your daily routine and schedule.
It's hard when we have a really busy tour schedule because we're traveling all the time. So touring and performing right now in my life is the most consistent thing. The other things that I do, yoga and animal flow, and I teach dance a lot, and my essential oil like business. So all of those things are like in and out of my professional career, but also really, really fulfilling. And I think that it's teaching is like, in a way, performing in that you're giving part of yourself, like a gift of you, you're presenting it to other people. And so I really love that. And I really try to help cultivate just like the best in students anytime that I can. Actually, when I'm touring with Momix, I do teach we offer master classes wherever we go in a lot mm-hmm. of cities. So I do teach those too. And those are really fulfilling too. And you get to meet lots of different types of people, lots of different students. And I think there's something to learn from everybody. And it's usually really, really inspiring.
Yeah, absolutely. Tell us more about your yoga practice. I'm curious to hear how that's helped to shift your relationship with dance, maybe even your relationship with food, and you know how that's really worked into the revelations that you've had just over the recent years.
Yeah. So my yoga training, the style that I mostly trained in, it was really, really beneficial for me because it focused a lot on freedom and authenticity, being true to yourself. So in the types of classes that I was involved in, we were given movements and then we were allowed the freedom to like flow on our own and also to make choices for ourselves. So that's really hard as a dancer, because when you're dancing, you're told exactly what you're striving for. Like, here's the movement, here's the musicality, here's what you're like, down to like every part of your body, every cell. And it takes work to get out of that mindset and start to listen to what you need. So sometimes a teacher would suggest certain movements, and it's up to me to decide, like, is that best for me in this moment? Do I need to adjust that movement? Do I need to make it fit what I need right now today? Or like, how am I feeling? Maybe that doesn't benefit me in this moment, or I don't want to do that in this moment. And we were given the freedom to do what we needed and to really start to trust our own choices and ourselves. So it's a great question that you're asking, because it actually really influenced just myself in general, my trust of myself, my trust of my body, and listening to my body, and then allowing myself the freedom to move. So you become a little more intuitive, and you become stronger at listening to like your body's wants and your own choices, and then allowing yourself the freedom to do them, to choose them, and know that that's right, and that you are right in the moment, and you can do what you need, and you don't always need to be told what to do, or you don't have to ask permission. So that was a great practice for me.
Yeah. So that reminds me so much of everything that we talk about in regard to the work of building a more intuitive and supportive relationship with food. For most dancers, if not most people in the world, is really anything but intuitive in the beginning. It's so challenging to be told, okay, I have unconditional permission to eat any food that's accessible to me at the moment without having to abide by very rigid food rules. So much of this parallels the rigidity of ballet, of dance, and classical dance in general. And I think this is really brings in so many of the parallels that we see, or in the work that I do with nutrition for dancers, is just so many dancers really fixating on a lot of rigidity with their eating, that when they are told of this almost, radical new way of fueling their bodies, that it can be from a place of building self-trust, also understanding that that takes a lot of time, because there's a lot of unraveling that has to happen and a lot of discomfort to be had throughout that work.
Yes, yes, exactly. And I was thinking about this recently and about this journey that I've had with you over time, and you're in the work that you do, and how much time it takes. And I didn't even realize it until recently that it's like little by little by little by little I build it. We're always working on it all the time. But in the beginning, you think, okay, I understand these concepts, so I'm just going to start doing this now. And you can't really jump from A to Z so quickly. And it's that like tiny bit every time, and all of this practice, this consistent practice, that builds a sustainable way of being. And I feel like this way of being is so much stronger for me now than it was before, and maybe even today from yesterday. And so like I also don't think I'm ever going to reach like the mountaintop necessarily. And that's also a beautiful thing about the journey, is that like we're always evolving, and maybe that way of a way I was in the past served me at that time. But like now I'm evolving into something that serves me better now. And I think that the consistent practice, like you have to be really patient, really, really patient. And that's hard too, because we're like, well, why can't I just, like you're saying, this perfectionist mindset, like, why can't I suddenly, if I understand it intellectually, why can't I just like, why isn't it happening like this? Or you maybe get upset when like, you feel like you take a couple steps backwards. And I think your work is amazing, because you you're just like a constant support. You're always putting out this, the same messaging over and over. And that for me has really, really helped, because you're like this small, gentle voice that's a consistent reminder. It's like, hey, it's okay. Hey, it's okay. Over and over. And so sometimes when I feel like I lose it a little bit, you're just always reminding me, even in like the work that you put out on social media, it's like, it's there. And so it's really lovely that, I feel like I always need it, because I need this reinforcement in a way. And I hear that from other, professional dancers too, who are familiar with you and your work. They're like, oh, I love her. I love what she says. I love her message. And it's just something that I think we as an industry really, really need. And so thank you for that, and for like not just saying it one time, but saying it like all of the time. I think
that
like,
makes really me helpful. That makes me so happy that you're saying that. I cannot even tell you how many times I feel to myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm saying the same thing again. They're gonna, like, who really wants to hear these messages over and over again? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm just gonna, you know, I post it anyway, but I definitely have a lot of my own like self-doubt with just mm-hmm. social media in general that I work through myself. But so I'm happy to hear that. I'm happy to hear that the repetition is helping.
Yes, because we're getting the other messaging all the time.
Right.
And it's also like if it's like a habit that's built inside you for this other way of thinking, then you have to like undo it slowly. It's like gravity, like you're constantly in gravity, but you have to work out all the time to like build the strength to resist gravity. It's like that kind of thing. Like we just need that reinforcement of your messaging consistently, so that like you can keep being reminded like, okay, wait, it is okay. It is okay. Let me reapproach this.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. That really is so nice to hear. Heather, you've given us such wonderful insight. I'd like to finish up with just one more question that I ask everybody. I'm sure you even might know what it is, but how would you define what it means to be the healthy dancer?
Yeah. Well, I think that for every person, that actually looks differently. And I think maybe for every person, even at a different time in their life, it's different. So I think whatever... for each individual, whatever you feel is your, I'm going to say like not best, but maybe favorite version of you is what's healthiest. And I think that like what I was saying before, when you can be on your own team and get out of your own way, like we're such self-healing. I really believe we're such a self-healing like creature. Mm-hmm. And even the earth itself, like it's always self-healing, and we block a lot of that. So when you can remove those blocks and you get out of your own way and you're like open to this like natural like destiny, like for thriving that we all have, I think that's when you can be your best and your healthiest self. So it's not necessarily an effort or something you have to cultivate, but something that you have to allow and like unblock so that you can just allow it to be.
I love that. Absolutely. And most importantly, I love the idea that your healthiest self can change all the time. Everything ebbs and flows. This is so important for dancers to hear, because it comes back to that tendency to fixate on wanting to perfect, even a supportive relationship with food. I'll have dancers start this work and get really down on themselves if they have a day where intrusive thoughts took over a little bit more than they would have hoped. And, you know, you're speaking so much to this work that it is so incredibly important for dancers to just understand, continue to check back in with, because every day looks different. How you define the healthy dancer one day might look very different from how you define the healthy dancer 2 years from now, a month from now. So
tomorrow.
I love that. Yeah, exactly. Heather, thank you so much. It was such a pleasure, as always, connecting with you. I know we will be in touch, and yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.